Red Hat X podcast series, discussing topics around application modernization, cloud-native development, securing workloads in the cloud, and partnering with Red Hat. Thank you so much for joining us today. My name is Brian. It's a Tech Talk episode on the Red Hat X podcast. I am here again today with John Aaron, founder and CEO of Aaronetics, and Jared Brennan, founder and principal consultant of Brennan Consulting. Borderline paranoia. A robot in the 1950s has become something that we couldn't recognize. Robots today are more compact, and the computers inside of them are tinier than ever. From the 2018 recognition of the hardware hack from China, or the 2022 Starlink hack, we'll discuss how to protect. John and Jared, welcome back. Good to have you both here again. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you, Brian.
Yeah, there's so much going on right now. It's crazy. I got to tell you, you guys are busy. You guys are, but I really appreciate the fact that we were able to coordinate a time. But for those who don't know who you are, briefly tell us about yourself and what you do. So, John, you want to go first?
I'm John Aaron. I formed a defensive digital hammer that impacts nation state security, defending our global enterprises.
Very nice. Jared?
I like that digital hammer. That's great stuff, John. No, Jared Brennan, Brennan Consulting. I say Brennan Consulting. I'm actually, you know, working with multiple companies. One of the companies that I work with, SideChannel, that offers virtual CISO services, is growing so quickly they've asked me to come on full time. So I'm keeping the consulting piece of Brennan Consulting to do the teaching and training that I do, like with LinkedIn. But again, this notion that organizations from the board level down are realizing that they've got to get this security thing figured out is driving hiring for folks who've been at it for a couple of years who can come in and say, here's what I've learned. Let me help you accelerate the development of your program. So good stuff. Great company, SideChannel to work with, but
that's great.
Keeps me hopping.
Yeah. Well, good. Well, that's some good new news. So awesome to hear about that. John, anything new to share about Aaronetics since we last spoke?
I'm presenting at B-Sides in San Diego.
Okay.
And sharing that. And I'll be attending another conference in DC. I'm in DC a lot more recently than I anticipated ever in my life, as well as Florida. But I'm having good meetings, sharing my technology in the circles that matter, that mean it.
Nice.
That can help us defend our nation state and our global enterprises. So we're looking for that one larger customer to use our software to defend their network. And it may be a local regional bank that's in Cleveland, Ohio, where we're located, because they have an infrastructure Linux backend, which is curious because there's almost no Red Hat commonly up here in Cleveland, Ohio.
Hmm. Well, that's good.
Looking to change that.
Yeah. I like it. Cool. Okay, well, just really quickly, though, because, you know, I just need to know if there's anything you guys are currently nerding out on. If there's anything newsworthy, that is.
Newsworthy?
Just one thing?
Yeah.
You know what?
Yeah, one of the things that keeps coming up again and again in the circles I'm in, as weird as this sounds, is quantum computing, which, you know, we look at quantum in the home user sense and say, well, I don't have a quantum laptop, therefore quantum isn't here yet. But what a lot of folks don't realize is that when you're subscribing to cloud services, that there are quantum, what do I want to call them, underpinnings that you can tap into, and where, you know, quantum's never really going to land on laptop in the way that we think about it today. It is pretty amazing for churning through very large data sets.
Yeah.
When we look at data that's been stolen and is encrypted, organizations are wiping their brow saying, that was a close one, but at least it was encrypted. We're okay. Hmm. When that quantum computing becomes more and more accessible to threat actors, they can be sitting on data sets for 10, 20, 30 years. And then eventually the computing power is going to catch up to where it can decrypt what we're currently calling unbreakable encryption algorithms. And when that comes, that day lands, the notion of what's in those data sets, is it still valuable? You know, if it's a credit card number that expired 2 decades ago, maybe not. But if it's national defense information, if it's covert operations, if it's people who are deployed in hostile areas and have their informant network, and now we've got the names and locations of all these informants, that kind of grudge isn't going to go away, and it's going to be a scary time, unfortunately, for a lot of people. So I've had a couple of opportunities to talk about that and they keep coming my way. So I'm trying to help educate organizations on what do we need to do today to prevent that from happening.
Yeah.
Which gets back to the, you know, keep fighting the good fight against data breaches and attacks that take advantage of existing technology today.
Yeah.
Because if the data never gets stolen, it's not going to get cracked.
Right. I mean, I think my quantum exposure, Jared and Brian, is that not to scare people, but as probably Jared, you already know, quantum will shatter the current infrastructure we currently use.
Yeah, it's not just the encryption, it's of data at rest. But if I look at the rise of Internet of Things technology, I just saw a stat. It was today. I was out on the World Economic Forum website poking around their IoT articles. And there was one stat that was an article drafted in 2016 talking about the growth, economic growth of Internet of Things. And it went from something like 750 million to 8.1 million euros annually, or I don't know what the exact stat was. If you step back and look at it at a macro level, that's 10x over the course of 10, 15 years that this technology becomes more and more, from an economic standpoint, pervasive, but also from a consumer standpoint, an end user standpoint, corporate standpoint. It just becomes a part of our day-to-day. And a lot of that IoT technology leverages symmetric encryption, communication channels. I think that's what it is. The ability to break that IoT connection to intercept that stream and then get into the whatever commands reside within that data in transit and change them, it then becomes another physical threat as we look at how IoT is used, not just today, but in the years to come. And, you know, again, I should clarify, I'm a huge proponent of advancing technology. And so when I share this, I'm not sharing it that quantum is bad and it's going to ruin everything. But to John's point, it is going to require new paradigms for developing security-based technology, securing systems and data at rest, securing in motion, securing in memory. And when I say new paradigms, it aligns with what we're seeing with NIST and the work they've been doing for the past few years to vet these new algorithms. Which it's like using lattice-based math instead of our traditional, let's just make huge numbers that are too big to reverse, right? And so it's stepping back and saying, if we could create this technology today, given what we've learned over the last few decades, what would it look like? And whenever you're starting from scratch, it's, I don't know, there's a lot of trial and error. There's a lot of, you know, we think this is going to hold up until somebody, the algorithms that they were poking around with got cracked within a day by like an archaic laptop.
Yeah.
Like current tech laptops. So there's going to be some lessons learned as we're trying to come up with these new paradigms.
Oh yeah. So I'm curious what your prediction as far as the range of time. When do you think this is coming? Ish.
Well, I think it's going to be coming soon because I'm involved on a NIST draft document that's protecting CUI. And so we're doing this in government. Acting fast is not common for many of our Americans and older Americans, but I think
that's a fair statement.
The younger Americans are being exposed to a method of speed, which is very uncharacteristic of how government operates, because there is a major threat on the horizon. To Jared's point, it's a paradigm shift that we all need to recognize. Yeah, you may want a zero trust thing or whatever you want to call it, but once you have quantum, what are you going to do?
Yeah, when we talk about it, sorry to interrupt, John, but to get to a very specific, like, when's it coming? I saw a paper from McKinsey and Company. The researchers were talking to a number of folks in the financial industry, and their prediction was that the financial industry was going to begin realizing gains from quantum computing by 2025.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's just 2-3 years out.
Yeah.
And when we look at other industries, when we look in, you know, the government space where we have nation states and some very sensitive information, some very large defense contracts, I'm certain there's work that's being done today that the general public doesn't know about because it's on a need to know basis.
Sure.
But the short answer for me, Brian, is follow the money. If someone believes they can gain a competitive advantage in the near term, and given some of the technical advancements we've seen in the last couple of years, new ways of, like, I saw some research where one of the organizations, one of the research institutes, started using very strong magnets to observe the quantum state of these machines, where what they had to do previously was create this a cryogenic system that would freeze everything to absolute zero so that they would stop moving long enough that we could see where they were and make the calculation. The notion of doing it with magnets is arguably less expensive, and it contributes to how quickly this tech is going to be more readily available. So sorry to interrupt, John, but I did want to emphasize the point that, you know, we're not talking a couple of decades out. We're talking, there are organizations already using it in a limited capacity, and it's just going to get better and better and better every year.
Yeah.
And we're going to see it in enterprise systems within the next few years.
Likely, because there was a meeting I had in Tennessee, shall we say, back a decade ago on what was in that office space that we couldn't talk about. And that was a decade ago. And so it's on the horizon, 2023. 2024, which as the crow flies is 3 months away. That's 90 days.
Yeah.
So it's one quarter. It's soon. And it's how do you protect that?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, because I watched a recent film from the 50s, a little snippet, short thing on the technology they had in the 50s. You saw these model rockets and these robots and these things. I mean, these iconic pictures we have, right? But they never envisioned that actually being reality. Today, I saw something online of how a robot entity kicking down a human person because it's a robot.
Yeah.
And how robots are real nowadays, and it's something we didn't see in 1950.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Boston Dynamics. You watch a Boston Dynamics video on YouTube, yeah, and you're like, "Is this a short film? Is this special effects?"
Yeah.
And no, it's all legit. It's real.
Yeah.
And then you go and you look at some of the companies, especially out of Japan, that are developing, like you said, John, humanoid, not just with the physical structure of the robot, but giving them lifelike characteristics. It's like something out of Westworld, and you're sitting watching HBO at home going, haha, this sci-fi stuff's pretty amazing. And then you realize that
sci-fi.
Hop on a plane, it's not sci-fi.
Yeah.
One of the things, if I look at that, and a lot of folks have been talking about AI for years. And as we look at self-driving vehicles in particular, and vehicles that if they make the wrong decision, the technology driving these, then again, loss of life scenarios. Back on Westworld, I don't know if you guys have watched it at all, but in season three, you've got Aaron Paul, right? Who was Jesse Pinkman on Breaking Bad. And he's applying for a job, and he's having a conversation with someone on the phone, and he stops. He's like walking outside on the sidewalk, and he kind of stops. He says, "Wait a minute, are you a real person?" And the person on the other end was not. They were an artificial person, artificial intelligence. And again, we see stuff like that, and we think it's all entertainment and humorous. But how many chatbots are we talking to today?
Oh yeah.
When we're on a website, how many SMS messages are we getting from these smart machines? What are they called? Not chatbots. There's another word for it. Drawing a blank, but it's fascinating to me how how quickly the it's changing right in front of our eyes.
Oh, I know.
And we don't even recognize.
I was thinking about, that growing up with Star Trek, The Next Generation, 1987, the stuff that they were inventing and saying, this is, hundreds of years out. And then in the early 90s, I'm sitting here going, man, wouldn't it be amazing if we had this? Or what was the other? I mean, the other one I grew up with was Knight Rider. Huge fan of Knight Rider. Oh, yeah. And I just wanted to have a watch that I could call somebody on. And I'm like Seriously? I didn't expect this in, you know, that soon. So you're right. I mean, that's where science fiction, I think, has really inspired people to let's do this then, you know, yeah. But you're right. I mean, just how fast things have changed, how quickly everything's gone is it's overwhelming, to be completely honest. And I think you guys are bringing up a good point that it's changing so quickly that we're not really ready for it in some ways. And so part of it is, let me ask you this then. Let's talk about then the effects of what happens, you know, when quantum comes, when things are moving faster than we can catch up to, what's going to happen? Get specific about what's going to happen to us, to companies, to, you know, the country, et cetera, et cetera. Because I think people need to know, you know, here are the possibilities and okay, now here's what we need to do.
I think I'm not liable to share what I know.
Well, no, you don't have to say necessarily specifically what's going to, yeah. I know things we can't know, but you know, give us something.
But what I do know is, I think you can find on Twitter, Mark Rusinovich saying we can no longer endorse C or C++ for programming languages. And you have a lot of individuals nowadays that use Python, and that dev security operations is a new thing. But really, the underlayment to your DevSecOps needs to be secure. Because what if your compiler is mangled? How would you know? Those style of actually knowing of what's actually going to occur, it's not science fiction. When you're driving your Tesla car and you load that software and it accidentally doesn't do what you want to do.
Mm. Yeah, I look at this impact in layers. There's, you know, John is spot on about when we're looking at the corporate layer or you know, even one layer deeper, the people building technology, whether it's in a startup or whether it's in a large enterprise, you know, how they build that technology, this idea of trust that is at the core of a secure and stable product, solution, application, is changing. And we've known that for some time with supply chain attacks where, you know, someone, we had the kid, was a high school kid, got into a Python library and added some malicious code just to see what it would do. And then suddenly we've got international security incidents. Yeah. And, you know, that's not uncommon. I mean, we saw the Rocks. I'm a big gamer, right? I still, you know, right now I'm still in the Overwatch. Nice. As we're recording this, OW2 hasn't dropped yet.
Oh, but I know. They're getting rid of Overwatch, man. What the heck?
Right around the corner. But, you know, Rockstar had that breach in late 22. And, you know, they've got a teenager, 17-year-old kid that they said he's the one who got in and swiped the GTA 6 data. Oh, yeah. So, and when we look at different attacks, I know the Uber hack where just kept sending multi-factor authentication messages until somebody got fed up and clicked yes just to make it go away on their phone, and then they're into a dev I don't know if that was a dev environment. There's so many breaches I can't even keep track of who got hit and how. But this notion of trust when we're seeing all these different angles come in or different angles of attack, and then we can't trust the components in our dev environment. We can't trust the GitHub repos. We can't trust the Python libraries. We've got to look somewhere else for trust. And when I step out of the corporate space and the development space, and I look at just the regular everyday folks, I had a conversation on LinkedIn recently about those internet password logbooks that you can buy on Amazon. Right. And we look at these and we say, that is the anathema, the security, right? It is the exact opposite of what we're trying to teach people to do. When we're telling them, don't click on the MFA link, or we're telling them, you know, test the libraries, run them through some analyzer, look for malicious code before you bake it into the solution you're building. We're fighting against people who are making money off of selling these password binders that people can just stick in their desk. There's one I saw on Amazon that has almost 23,000 ratings.
Oh my gosh.
And that person's been selling that same logbook for over a decade.
And they're not the joke ratings like the Howling at the Moon t-shirts.
No, these are legit, because we've done as an industry is we've put people in a position where we keep trying to help them with security, and we keep trying to work against all these bad actors, and we keep trying to build this trust. But the way we're doing it is so obtrusive.
Broken.
And you know, we're putting it back on them, and we're telling the user with the multi-factor token, well, why did you click yes? Without understanding what their day is like. And the reason that these logbooks are still successful, these password logbooks, if I want to engage as a digital citizen and I did not grow up using this technology or didn't have access to this technology when I was watching my kids grow up, or my friends sign up for Facebook and Twitter and TikTok, and I either become a Luddite and don't use technology at all and keep my information safe. But that also means, I don't do my online banking. I don't pay my credit card bills online. I don't do anything online. And I just keep getting further and further behind. Or I go sign up for all these websites and try to remember this complex password that they're making me use. And then they get breached and make me change it. And I can't remember if it was 1! or 2! So I'm just going to use the same one everywhere. And then Troy Hunt launches Have I Been Pwned, points out if you're using the same password everywhere, they get it once, they get it. And it's a terrible thing to do to non-technical end users.
Yeah. Let's see.
As technologists, we're patient with it, because this is the career choice we've made. This is the life we live. And it's not right that we're doing this to all these other people. And that's, to get, John, when I look at what you're doing with Thor, to get out of user space and out of the user's purview, where they don't even know this stuff is happening, right? It is that deep in the technology that we're developing. Mm-hmm. We should have been doing this for years. And we know that. But John, yeah,
I should have made this when I was a kid for security.
Don't sell yourself short, man, because you're doing it now and you're ahead of the game, because other people should be doing this too. I'm not going to get on that soapbox too much. I'll stay on it a little bit.
But to your end, I was in Tampa with another friend, I'll leave his name is Mitch, who works at this large company. And he recognizes that we have sophisticated passwords, but our marketing mantra is to change your password every 30 days. And so you fall into a habit of what's accessible to you and your brain to what you can do. Mm-hmm. And so you operate work from home or at the office, typing a password you can remember. And it was, please stop asking users to change legitimate passwords. Hmm. It doesn't help anyone.
Yeah.
Wait, it's so
how, it was happening.
So they're not using something like a LastPass or 1Password. They're not using something like that. They're trying to actually remember it.
They're writing in a book.
Writing it down.
They write it down.
Oh my gosh! And I'm trying to tell people to stop doing that too.
I'll say this: I use password vaults, and I finally got my wife using one.
Yeah.
Which that was a whole nother challenge because she's my litmus test, right? When I look at something, is this reasonable from a security and technology perspective? She helps me see it outside of my day-to-day, outside of the work that I do in front of my laptop day in, day out. But I'm comfortable using password vaults. I'm comfortable using multi-factor authentication. I'm comfortable mm-hmm. creating passphrases that are difficult for people to identify, let alone a machine to crack, mm-hmm. Current quantum aside. But again, I had an Apple IIe when I was, I could have been 10 years old.
Yeah.
My dad had his own electrical contracting business, and he bought an Apple IIe.
Oh yeah.
Quote unquote for the business. And I'm looking back 37 years later, and I realized he didn't buy that for the business. He put that technology in front of me, my brother, and my sister, so that when we got to this point in our lives, we wouldn't be scared of it, or we would be comfortable using this. And I've, I'm of the family. I've actually made it a career to understand how to use this technology and how to secure it. And I know how fortunate I am to have had that opportunity.
Oh yeah.
And when we look at things like LastPass and any, you know, 1Password, any of the password vaults that are out there, it's not a perfect solution for people who are not sure how to use technology, that mm-hmm. that it's based on an assumption that just doesn't play out.
Hmm. There was a conversation I had down the street, because to be honest, I use Bitwarden.
Yeah.
And I'm also one of those outliers that has self-hosted Bitwarden.
Hmm. Yep.
And I don't natively trust the Google Authenticator on my Android phone, because mm-hmm. that's one more earmark of my location where I'm authenticating this thing. I like the OTP that's on Bitwarden.
Yeah.
And it's like, how do we secure, because hybrid work's here to stay, how do we actually remain secure with the escalation of quantum, with the escalation of DevSecOps? How do we guarantee everything? Because Jared would know, I think you would know too, Brian, it's something that's gone terribly wrong. Mm-hmm. As Jared mentioned, there's a break or a breach posted on LinkedIn multiple times per day per week.
Mm-hmm.
It's, we keep on having large marketing budgets saying this is the solution. And there's other small solution providers, such as myself, that actually can stop malware, that can stop insider threats, that can actually reassure you.
Say it. Say zero trust. I want to hear you say it.
This is a zero trust environment we're living in, but it's living though. And yeah. So if you want to do zero trust, go to your bank and try to make a new bank. Make a new bank account, because they're going to tell you they need your first, your last, your street, your phone, everything about you. But you don't know who you're talking to. That's the, it's zero trust. And it's, thank you, Mr. Kindervag. It's a nice idea. I chalk that up with, shall we say, Marxism. It's nice on paper. You can't actually implement this.
Oh my God, that's the best analogy, John. I love that to death. Oh,
that's so funny.
That's so good. Sounds good on paper, but let's try this in the real world. No, it is a great idea, and that's where we struggle, is the implementation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we shoot ourselves in the foot because we're competing for market share, and we're not trying to solve the problem. And that's, yeah. If I look at Colin's book, Good to Great, right? And the analysis that his team did on companies that that grew over decades of analysis, decades of data, companies that approached it from we're going to do the right thing and then make money are the ones that, you know, you can buy today and you don't get fired for, right?
Or interesting.
You put your money in their stock and it's going to grow over time because they've built a machine that's got momentum that's not going to slow down or derail. But at the same time, you still need innovation, and you need people to say, look, that's the old way. This is the new way. Mm-hmm. And if I had the time, money, resources, I am convinced that and this is just one layer, because I look at the machine layer, I look at ransomware, I look at various code-based attacks that are trying to compromise systems, applications. That's where I look at what John's doing with Thor. And I think, yes, this is innovative. This is something that solves that layer of the problem. If I bring it up another level to the user level, the concept of digital identity and what that means and how we implement digital identity is, in my opinion, it's equally as important. And what I would do if, again, resources were not an issue, a blockchain-based, distributed ledger-based identity solution that includes both proofing, authentication, well, and authorization, all three. And it doesn't all have to happen on the blockchain, but that distributed ledger gives us the trust that, John, to your point, when you go to the bank and you don't know who you're talking to, if you can validate a digital identity against a blockchain where multiple nodes on the chain come back and say, yeah, John, this really is Brian. You know him and you can trust them. Problem solved. But, you know, we're looking at blockchain right now going, man, I got to get me that next Bored Ape. I got to get the NFT jam that's going to land me my quick million and I'm out. And, you know, We're just playing around with technology that could be fundamentally life-changing. I saw a bit where somebody put a, they had a solar powered, it's that maker approach. I don't know if you guys have ever read Cory Doctorow's book, Makers. Little Brother is fantastic. It's 1984 for the current generation. But, Makers came out years ago and was talking about, as technology becomes more accessible to the individual, maker technology, not just 3D printing, but even the ability to exchange videos and instructions on how to build a thing, how to do a thing, that you're going to see a decentralization. It's not going to be a handful of companies making all the things. It's going to be people making the things. And if I look at what we have in the Tor network, invisible internet, some of these decentralized networks, you've got the ability to have an entirely self-contained city, town, community, depending on how big you want to go, where the people within that community are the ones making the technology and not requiring somebody outside to build it for them. And I share this because there was a kid who built a digital identification mechanism that he was taking down to remote villages in Africa, and it was solar powered. Kid built this out of stuff he could buy at Micro Center, right? Or buy on Amazon.
Yeah.
And where people, when they needed money, right, they've got family members who have moved away, live on other continents entirely, so that they can earn a living and they can send money back home so that the people they love can have access to shelter and food and water and clothing, right? Maslow's hierarchy, the foundation. These people would literally have to walk a day, 2 days to the nearest center of commerce, right? I can't even call it a city, where they might have access to like a Western Union or something. And the fees on these wire transactions, they're awful. When you've got people who are already destitute, and then they've got somebody who's earning this money, and they walk for days to get access to that money so they can buy food, and then half the money's taken in the fee. It's just an awful model. It's inhuman, right? It does not reflect the best in us. And this kid said, look, I got a solution. I've got this thing. It's got a satellite uplink. You can do a digital fingerprint reader, identify yourself, and then you can, just charge it during the day in the sun. And solar power does not turn everything off at night. I do want to point that out. So, you know, they could even do it in the evening. And now these people are getting another way to get the money. They're getting days of their life back. And over the course of a year, it'd be weeks of their life back, because we're solving these challenges through innovation. And the more we embrace that, the more we find these people building technology. So the more we support people who are looking at blockchain technologies from the perspective of solving the identity issue that we have right now, the more we've got the opportunity to solve that other layer above and beyond, like the ring zero stuff, but to actually solve how we interact with one another. It's possible.
Yeah.
We have the technology. We can rebuild him, but it's possible.
So I think it's worth note that Jared and I have a mutual friend. We can leave anonymous in this case, and because he's widely known. And this person and I spoke, and the best tactic to his identity is to just throw it away and give it away. That doesn't become your problem then when it becomes stolen.
Yeah.
That only forms the government to act quicker, because they're the ones that need you to have the identity. And I'm not suggesting we need to get rid of it all and make a new world we want to live in, but it's to make a new thing that's impenetrable.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, could you imagine having a driver's license that just has a bunch of barcodes? Or have you actually taken a barcode reader and read the PDF encoded on your driver's license to see what actually is in that document?
No.
Because it's not the full thing of your front side of your driver's license.
Huh.
So it's like you're walking around with what do you know?
Yeah.
And it's the same thing. You're walking around with your laptop. You just went to Starbucks. You just connected it. Like, I wouldn't do that in Turkey. Not the label of the country, nothing personal. But right when I was there, I questioned it. When I flew over other countries, I questioned, like, where am I in the air? It's a changing the world to be better, to be more secure. That's our goal, our mutual goal.
It's possible.
Goal.
Yeah. So what do we need to do right now? Like for those listening right now, what's the advice that they need to implement right now? Because you're right, there's a ton we can do and we should be doing, but we got to start with something.
On the other note, I would read Michael Pollan's Omnivore's Dilemma on how to eat food. I would definitely read stuff on our whole American diet, because on that, it's the marketing budgets, how to actually buy a computer and understand what is actually on that computer. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if you've tried to apply, Jared, to RSA to speak there, but my next big zero day is the unopened box containing a laptop, because you have no idea what's on that laptop.
Yeah, I'd say just the supply chain risk, but sometimes it's installed by the manufacturer. So. Mm-hmm. Omnivore's diet. No, I like that approach, John. And I know, Brian, that's a little off the wall, but reading, not going to hurt. I'd mention again, Cory Doctorow's book, Makers, mm-hmm. for perspective, to understand what options, what capabilities you have available. But of course, the security guy in me has to offer up the handful of staples. Use strong passwords, use multi-factor authentication wherever you can. Don't use the same password on multiple sites. If you know how to use a password vault, use it. If you don't, use one of those password logbooks, but don't take it anywhere. Keep it in a safe at home, because yeah. you need a physical vault to counter the digital vault. But those would be the few. It's not the consumer's responsibility to fix this. They're the end user is bound by the world the technology companies are creating and molding. Mm-hmm. Although the one thing a consumer can do, right? If I'm looking at that population, put your money where your not your mouth is, where your heart is. If you want to drive positive change in the technology space and you want to support companies that are building things that are going to create that better world, then those should be the companies you buy from.
Yeah.
Because though that money is the resource they use for research, development, and then ultimately mm-hmm. product deployment. True. So, you know, if you're being more conscious about, is this company investing in like blockchain-based identity solutions? Are they supporting passwordless authentication? Have they bought John's Thor solution and they're protecting their technology at that low level? I mean, if they have security messaging that's more than the fluff, we take security and privacy seriously. No, back it up. How do you do it? Right. Then those should be the companies you do business with. That makes a difference.
Yeah. Yeah, you vote with your money. You always do.
Yeah.
I mean, from coming in from left field, I mean, everything you've been told about your car to computing, everything. And so in the InfoSec or cybersecurity field, we have large marketing budgets with solutions. And would you know it, there's another post tomorrow on LinkedIn of this company getting whack-a-mole. It's if we have such great solutions and such great marketing, why do we keep on having this?
Mm. Ooh, that's an uncomfortable question, John. You want to ask that again? Yeah, that's a big one. How much money are we going to throw at it before we think we've solved it? It's not.
Yeah.
We need the money to invest in different ways of doing it. We need to think differently, and the money should support.
Right. Those. Which is why I'm thankful yeah. that I've had a few meetings in the DC metro area to adopt my technology, because we need this as a public organizations need this to guard, defend, deter insider threats and outside threats that we need to like I said, stop this behavior. It's like the Saturday Night Live. I don't remember the comedian, but I think the whole 5-minute spiel is stop it.
Yeah.
You feel this way? That's great. Stop it. And it's probably what we need with the whole industry. And if quantum's coming sometime soon, it's going to occur sooner. You need an actual solution.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate this. I mean, there is so much more that we could talk about. We could go on for a long time on this, but this is a lot to think about and a lot to implement and a lot to consider. So thank you for some of the resources to go check out. There's so much more conversation that really needs to come from this, but I really appreciate you both yeah. sharing all this stuff. So can people contact you guys, you know, if they have questions or want to chat about this further? Are you open to that or?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely, I'd encourage yes. it.
Yes.
Yeah. I know with me, I stay in contact with people on LinkedIn.
Okay.
So if you're a LinkedIn user and you look up Jared Brennan, I'm easy enough to find. I've got a lot of courses in the LinkedIn Learning Library. So if you don't know what I look like, I'm the old guy with no hair on top, but the gray beard.
And, yeah, me too.
Yeah. LinkedIn, if folks want to hit me up there, I'd love okay. to keep the conversation going.
And it's JerodBrennen, just FYI, because, you know, people are going to get that yeah. misspelled, of course.
Yeah, yeah. I appreciate that, Brian. Yeah, I no really problem. Do.
John, how about you?
You can find me at aeronetics.com. Okay. That's AeronetiCS.com or on LinkedIn as well. It's JohnAron because there are famous people that have rode elephants in Phantom of the Opera, or there's famous astronauts that have been not astronauts, but people at Mission Control with the same name.
So wow. Okay.
I'm flying low as I can.
Yeah, I love it. Well, John and Jared, thank you both so much. Really appreciate it again. And I love these conversations every time. I feel like we need to keep these going at some port, some way, somehow. We need to do it. But thank you both.
Absolutely. Thank you, Brian. Appreciate it, Brian.
Yeah.
Good talking to you.
John Aaron, founder and CEO of Aeronetics, and Jared Brennan, founder and principal consultant of Brennan Consulting. My name is Brian. Thanks so much for joining us here on the Red Hat X podcast series. For more information on Aeronetics and today's discussion, head on over to aeronetics.com. Also, feel free to connect with John and Jared. You can reach out to them both on LinkedIn. Jared is at Jared Brennan. And as I mentioned earlier, it's JerodBrennen. And John is at John Aaron, and his last name is spelled Aron. Reach out to them. They'd love to chat with you. Have a wonderful day. We'll talk to you in the next episode.